The Offside Rule, We Get It, with Lindsay Hooper and Kate Borsay.
Hello, it's the Offside Rule podcast number 22. Two Little Ducks. It's a special one because we've got a special guest today. You can download the Offside Rule podcast at Offside Rule Pod is our Twitter account. We're on Facebook and you can listen via SoundCloud and iTunes, out every Thursday. Kate Borsay joins me as usual. Hello, Kate.
Hello, her. I didn't know that you talk bingo, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I used to play bingo with my granddad when I was younger. I'm legs 11, I'm across all of them.
Two fat ladies.
Top of the shop, number 90. Speaking of 90, a 90th minute goal at the weekend, but this was England versus Canada. Joining us today, Rachel Yankee. Rachel, I'm so pleased that you're joining us for this podcast because you are now the most capped senior England player. You equaled Peter Shilton's record at the weekend with your appearance in that game.
I know, it was a bit mad. It wasn't the best of games for my 125th game. You know, we didn't play as well as we could have, but yeah, fantastic. I'm still shocked, you know, at the achievement, to be honest.
I wanted to ask you about this with caps. Are you pleased that someone else keeps count? Because I'm guessing that you wouldn't be able to.
I get told.
Thanks for coming in today. I wanted to also ask you about your career generally. I mean, when you started out, did you think the women's game would come to the point that it is now? I mean, we're going to start looking ahead to the new WSL season with a bit of a chat in a while. Did you think it would get to the dizzying heights that it did this summer, certainly with the Great Britain squad in the Olympics?
No, never. I mean, obviously, you know, I started out and there was probably sort of one person and the dog sort of watching us in a field. And now to think that the Olympics team had, you know, playing against Brazil had, 70,000 people at Wembley all paying money to come and watch women's football. I'm astonished.
I think you are like sort of one of those privileged players that will see the difference in the game because of when you started out and when you ultimately, I suppose, will finish your career. You'll have seen a lot happen. It's like our grandparents' generation with the whole society, you know, seeing us going from like pre-war Britain into this. I feel like it's that with you with football.
Yeah, I find myself saying to the younger players, in my day. No, it is. I mean, I've been through everything and seen different things and, you know, I can see how far the game's grown and it's really good. Hopefully we need to keep building on that.
It's the first time that we've been joined here in our little podcast studio by someone who is an MBE. So I feel incredibly privileged. I almost went to curtsy as I came into the room, Rachel. You got that back in, what, 2005, 2006, was it?
Yep.
Tell us why you got that. Just would obviously be one of the highlights of your career.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was sent a letter to Arsenal, but it had previously gone to Birmingham, who I was playing for in 2005. And obviously I'd moved to Arsenal. The letter had been sent down, but someone at Birmingham had opened it. I know. So it was in a normal envelope. So I thought, sitting in the Arsenal changing room reading this letter, one of these girls is winding me up. So I looked around, no one was biting, so I thought, oh, they're good. But I didn't believe it. But no, I got awarded for services to football. So, you know, fantastic. And, you know, I feel, you know, deeply honoured for that.
And you're going to surpass, fingers crossed, Peter Shilton's record. You've got a friendly coming up in June. And then, of course, you've got the European Championships in Sweden in July. So you're going to make history, basically, aren't you?
I hope so. I hope so. You know, hopefully, touch wood, I'll stay fit and healthy and, you know, make the next game and play in that and make the squad for the Euros.
Now, I know that you were watching the Man United Man City game last night because we had a quick chat on the way in. What did you make of that?
It was good. I obviously support Arsenal, so I didn't really mind who won. a big Van Persie fan, so I wanted him to get a goal. Unfortunately, he didn't. But no, it was a good game to Aguero. What a goal that was, just to finish it off.
We had some great goals this week, actually. But I think it's a good point to say that this podcast is all about football. So we will have a couple of topics coming up in the men's game. We'll also talk about the FAWSL. So to give people a teaser of what's coming up, we are going to, for our final topic, have a little bit of a light-hearted chat about pinch me, I must be dreaming, things that happen in football matches that you don't expect. And this all comes off the back of, I was reporting at the weekend on a very dull 0-0 draw, but it was Crystal Palace versus Barnsley, and Barnsley turned up in a kit that matched Crystal Palace, which meant that the referee forced them to play in Crystal Palace's away kit, having to wear the opposition's badge. Would you like that?
No way. No way. I just can't believe that anyone would turn up in the kit matching the other team, you would know. I can't believe. Kit Men's going to get a bit of a earful there.
I was rubbing my eyes, and it was a very stripy, stroby distraction when I was reporting, I have to say. But it made me think, let's think of other things that have happened. I'm sure you've got some that's happened in your career, and I know that Kate Borsay has been looking up some fantastic stories for us. Also, I just wanted to say we'll have the non-league roundup as usual with Faye Carruthers. We'll be talking Serie A with Michelle Lissell. We're talking about the new season dawning for the WSL, but we're going to start off with our topic number one this week, the outsider who's impressed. Did either of you have a flutter on the Grand National at the weekend?
I was in a sweepstake. I spent the whole weekend on my sister's hen do, and I must admit I still feel slightly the worse for wear now. I'm struggling. But we did a big sweepstake together, and I had two horses.
Neither finished?
One was T3, which nearly did it.
Yeah.
But no idea what happened to the other one. I was still in a haze.
Rachel?
We had a sweepstake. We were obviously in Camper, England, but we had a sweepstake there, and everyone was very jealous when I pulled out Seabass. But great.
Because I had Kappa Blue, which came in runner-up, so I got my money back, effectively. Okay. But it was a big outsider that won, which has inspired the topic. It was Aurora's Encore, trained by Sue Smith, who won the Grand National. And it got us thinking about players in the Premier League who, at the start of this season, we didn't expect to be regular features at their clubs. So not regular starting 11s, but have now turned into just that. At the start of the season, they may be bought in as a periphery squad player. So I'm going to try and get you thinking of this. But they've managed to shine and work their way into the first team. So from the Premier League, can you both choose two examples of players who've managed to do just that? I'm going to start with Kate Borsay.
Well, I'm going to go for a pretty obvious one to start with, but he's definitely worth a mention, and that's Michu. What a masterstroke of a signing there for Swansea. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that they picked him up for £2 million, and he's adjusted to the Premier League so well, and I think that's what's impressed me more than anything else. Of course, when he arrived from Rayo Vallecano, no one really knew how much of a part he was going to have to play, but he's just been outstanding. You know, he's got loads of composure on the ball, he's so skillful as well, and he, you know, unlike some Spanish players who've come over, has, as I said, adapted so well to the Premier League. Very, very strong, you know, physically, technically very, very good, very, very strong. The timing of his runs is brilliant. He's scored 17 goals in 30 league appearances, and the furore around him might have slowed down a bit. I mean, certainly the first 3 months of the season we were all absolutely raving about him, but he has consistently done it throughout the season, so he would be one of my picks, Michu. The other one I'm going to mention is a goalkeeper. Now, this isn't out and out one of the best goalies in the Premier League, although his stats aren't that bad at all. In fact, they're fairly respectable, but I've chosen Brad Guzan from Aston Villa because actually Villa told him that they wouldn't be renewing his contract back in June last year. So to all intents and purposes, he was not going to be in that squad and he was going to be heading somewhere else. Anyway, there was a change of mind and he was brought back into the squad. And perhaps one of the biggest calls that Paul Lambert made was to sideline Shea Given, who is a goalkeeper of huge skill, reputation, has got a massive record behind him. Perhaps one of Lambert's biggest calls was to sideline Given and put Guzan in his place. And what a great decision that was. Just to give you a couple of stats on Guzan. This season, he's made more saves than any other Premier League keeper. Last season, he played in 6 games in the Premier League. This season, he's played in 30 games and made 107 saves. And so that's more than any other keeper. So that's absolutely brilliant.
And yet still Aston Villa are languishing down the bottom.
Now, this is the only downside, Lindsay Hooper, of course, is that Aston Villa, although you can have a bit of a pop at Villa, but I know who one of your picks is, so you can continue to pop away, but it'll be egg on your face in about 5 minutes' time. And what's good about him, of course, is the majority of the Villa side are an inexperienced side, so he's been playing behind a relatively inexperienced back four. Last campaign, Shea Given caught 36 crosses and punched away another 11 in the entire of last season. In this campaign, Guzan has punched 25 and caught an astonishing 85.
Wow. Now, Rachel Yankee next. And Rachel says that she's an Arsenal fan, but I know that both of her choices are Man United.
Suspicious.
Are you a secret?
No, I'm not. I'm going to change him now. No, I just think, you know, go for for youngsters, and Phil Jones has been absolutely amazing. You know, he's bought in by Man United for the future, and he's used to stake a claim, and you know, you can't knock him. He's played in all the important games, and he's been massive for them, and he was tremendous last night as well.
Maybe one that you didn't think that you would see as a regular starter on the team sheet. I know that Sir Alex rotates a bit more, but you were surprised at how often he has managed to get into that starting lineup.
And in different positions as well. Yes. You know, he's played at centre back, he's played in midfield, he's played as a man marker. So, you know, he's definitely important for that team.
And who's your other?
No, I'm going to change it now because unfortunately I can't think of anyone Arsenal. I'm actually going to go with a Liverpool youngster, Raheem Sterling.
You are a lady after my own. Liverpool player.
Well, actually, Raheem Sterling, I used to work in one of his primary schools.
Wow.
So I'm not going to say I taught him anything, but I used to coach him PE when he was about 8 years old. So yeah, it's amazing, and I feel, you know, a little bit starstruck when I see him up there, and they're proud that he's gone on to play for Liverpool. And you know, I don't think anyone would have thought that he would have been starting for Liverpool as many games as he has done this season, and he's been absolutely fantastic. So yes, very proud of him.
Good choice, and you kept the Gunners faithful happy there. I'm going with a Swansea player to begin with. In fact, I'm going Swansea Aston Villa, just like Kate Borsay. I'm going to go with a left back, Ben Davies at Swansea. And I think arguably this season he's been up there rivaling Patrice Evra, Leighton Baines as one of the best in the entire league. Davies came into the Swansea first team because of an injury to Neil Taylor, who got sidelined. He's now the number one choice. You can't go ahead of him now in the starting lineup. Only 19 years old as well, so a very bright future ahead. His first team debut was against West Ham back in the end of August, and then he signed a new 3.5-year contract later on this year. So what a turnaround in his fortunes, and certainly a stalwart of the side. The other is an Aston Villa player, actually, Kate Borsay. 22 years old, it's Christian Benteke, striker. I've been so impressed with him. And coming from Belgium, I mean, they paid £7 million for him, so I did expect him to play, but I didn't expect him to score as many goals as he scored, and I didn't expect him to be such a regular feature. And without the goals and Guzan saves, where would Villa be? I mean, 15 goals for Aston Villa this season. He gets around 3.2 shots on target per game. He's got Chelsea eyeing him up. Spurs have been in there for him. He's displaced Darren Bent, because who knew at the start of the season that Darren Bent wouldn't be playing, and Benteke is the man that everyone's talking about. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, coming from Belgium, often you get European players that come to the Premier League that struggle to settle in, but straight away he's found his scoring boots and found his feet. So he was my other choice.
Hi, this is Kirsty Gallagher, and I love the Offside Rule podcast.
Topic number two is the new WSL season. A new season dawns, and it starts this weekend. With you joining us, Rachel, I wanted to look ahead at the talent in the league set to impress this season. I'd like each of you to pick a position and then give me an example of a good experienced player in that position within the league and a good youth player coming through. So two players effectively to watch this season. I'm going to start with Kate once more.
OK, well, I'm going to start with the position of forward. I did kind of angst over this a little bit, because when I was looking at kind of where a lot of the WSL teams are very strong, the midfield, you know, it's almost, and I could be making completely the wrong comparison here, but obviously Spain famously fielded a side at Euro 2012 without anyone in the forward position. You know, they effectively made everyone a midfielder.
Are you suggesting this to Hope? Rachel isn't going to be happy.
I've got a little document for Rachel to give to Hope with a couple of pie charts on it. It's no coincidence, I think, when we're looking at the future of women's football too, there are so many gifted midfield players out there at the moment, so many strong contenders for that position. And because there are so many strong contenders, it sets the bar higher. And so you'll find that a lot of the goals in the WSL do come from the midfield positions, because it's so richly talented. But
Yet you've picked a striker.
Yes. To be controversial. Anyway, someone who you may know, Rachel, Melissa Lawley. She started out with Arsenal Ladies, where she played a few games for them. She got some Champions League experience too. She then joined Bristol Academy last season and has now gone to Birmingham Ladies. I think she's a good one to watch. She has progressed through the England ranks, the under-15s, 17s, 19s. And I think this season is the season where we'll get to see what she's made of. You know, notably Eni Aluko and Jodie Taylor Taylor, both forwards at Birmingham, have now gone to other places. Obviously, Eni's gone to Chelsea. Jodie Taylor's gone abroad, I think. And so here is an opportunity for Melissa Lawley to really show us what she's made of. So in terms of up and coming, a good youth player to look for, Melissa Lawley. She's quite versatile. She can play on either wing as well. Quite pacey. Quite a mature player as well. She started in the Super League at 18 years of old and kind of stepped up to it really, really well. So she's one for me to watch. And the experience in that position, well, this is really a bit of a tribute to Kelly Smith, because you can't mention women's football without mentioning Kelly. And of course, another one of Rachel's teammates. In fact, I'm just sucking up to Arsenal in this podcast, aren't I, by all accounts? And one of the reasons for me choosing Kelly really was that, you know, she is in the twilight of her career. We don't know how many more seasons we're going to see her play in the WSL. She's accumulated over 100 caps for England. She made a debut back in 1995. Of course, she was part of the squad for Great Britain at the 2012 Olympics. She's got so many, a bit like yourself, Rachel, she's got so many titles, FA Cup League titles. Of course, you guys won the UEFA Cup.
The treble year, love that year.
And the quadruple year as well, of course. Yeah. Now, Kelly's great because she is an example of how skillful women's football can be and how Great Britain, England can make a play to be one of the world's leading football nations, I think. And it began with people like Kelly, who got so much experience abroad, you know, was able to handle her own over in the States, as you did, you know, Rachel, in the W League as well. She's had her own problems. She's had quite a lot of injury woes. I know you've interviewed her a couple of times, Lindsay, and it's well documented.
Yeah, actually, this week, just gone, when we filmed the start of the new WSL season, we've done a preview show, which goes out on ESPN this week, which this will be afterwards, so hopefully you watched it. and I spoke to Kelly, and she said she's had another knock, and she was hobbling a little bit. She gets over them, but she said each time she gets a knock, it's more difficult every time. I think that's probably the twilight of your career. How it is.
Well, she's 34 now, and as I said, it's well documented how she's suffered with alcohol issues and depression in the past as well. But boy, is she resilient, and that's testament to her getting over all these injury woes. And she's one to watch for me, because if you want a good example of experience and someone who has helped to define women's football in England for what it is today, then I would certainly, certainly keep your eye on Kelly Smith.
Yeah, we put her alongside you, Rachel. she's down in the caps order, though, isn't she? That's what Rachel's thinking. So on to your pick. First of all, the position you've gone for. I'm interested what you would go for.
I've actually gone for wide midfielders, because they're the best, you know. They work the hardest. So I think for me, as an experienced player, Karen Carney, I think she's sort of coming into her prime. She's you know, got the knowledge of how to play that position, and also can play in different positions, like you say, another strong midfielder, or can play, you know, behind the striker or up front. So for me, I think, you know, she's definitely one to watch for Birmingham. But for a youngster coming through, Nikita Paris, that plays for Everton. I don't know if you saw the game against Liverpool, which was live on ESPN, which is, you know, she was fantastic in that game, and definitely one that will threaten and will look sharp and actually scare other teams. So I think she's going to be definitely one to watch for the future.
Well, just to make you blush, I have.
Lindsay Hooper, you big sucker.
I've gone for a left winger.
I wonder who that is.
There isn't any good ones.
I've gone for a 125 cap player. Rachel, the reason why I've gone for you in the experience role, because it just screams volumes to me. I mean, if you're going for consistency season upon season, you are the girl to go for in terms of trophies and silverware that you've got as well. And the thing that was an interesting comparison, I wanted to ask you about this. In comparison to Kelly, I don't know whether you think it's the position, but I mean, out on the wing, you're just as viable to tackles. You seem to have actually been quite good with injuries.
Yeah, couldn't jump very high. Yeah, no, I've been all right. You know, I've had my sort of fair share of knocks, and people are trying to just take me out all the time. But I've been quite lucky, and I've sort of stayed fitter and healthier than most of the other people that are my age. So, you know, hopefully, I don't know, good genes maybe. Thanks to the parents.
Well, I don't think I need to fill people in too much on what you do. I think people know who you are and what you've achieved. But who's the player that I've picked out that's hot on your heels? I've gone for an England under 23 player, Demi Stokes, who's at Sunderland. She's played in the FA Women's Cup final, which is what brought her to my attention. I thought she had an amazing game that game. And I think she potentially is someone that could maybe fill your shoes. They're big shoes to fill. What are your thoughts on that choice?
It's funny you say that because when Jordan joined Arsenal, she just went, "You remind me of Demi." And I was like, "What?" So, she said everything. We're very similar in our mannerisms and the way we play. So, I don't mind. Just she needs to hurry up a little bit.
She can be the new Rachel Yankee. We're going to take a little interlude now and catch up on all things non-league with Faye Carruthers. And hello, Faye.
The non-league roundup.
Thanks very much, ladies. There's been a change at the top of the Blue Square Bet Premier table. Mansfield Town sit in the automatic playoff spot after beating Macclesfield 3-1. They're now 2 points clear of Kidderminster as I record this. Kidderminster play on Saturday, but Mansfield have 2 games in hand over them. Wrexham closed the gap on second to 8 points after beating Cambridge 1-0. Newport still in the playoff places. They beat Braintree 1-0, so stay a point behind Wrexham in fourth place. Grimsby just behind them on 76 points after beating Dartford 2-1. The top five have isolated themselves somewhat. There is a 10-point gap now between fifth and sixth. Hereford are the closest challengers after a 1-0 win against fellow promotion chasers Forest Green, who they leapfrog. Both sides still have an outside chance of making the playoffs, but it's looking less and less likely. Finally, I can talk about a win for Luton. They beat Lincoln 3-0, thrashed 5-1 away to Gateshead at the weekend, mind you. Manager John Still opting to go on a scouting mission rather than going up for that game. That prompted criticism from some fans, but he insists it was necessary to build for next season. So after 4 winless matches before that drubbing, it looks like it is all about next season now for the Hatters. Lincoln are struggling, though. They're just a point off relegation as it stands. As a Gateshead, who lost 2-0 to Nuneaton despite that 5-1 win over Luton. Elsewhere, Alfreton beat Barrow 4-0 and Hyde beat Ebbsfleet by a 0-2. Now, I know you're just about to do a pinch me, I must be dreaming chat, so I wanted to mention a game back in the 2008-2009 season. Luton were in League 2, so technically it's not a non-league example, but it was funny nonetheless. And Luton won 3-1, so it's nice to talk about us in glowing terms for a change. We were playing Aldershot at Kenilworth Road, and in the 19th minute, Keith Keane smashed a free kick straight into the advertising hoardings just above the goal at the Oak Road end. He hit it with such force, though, that it knocked down part of the advertising hoardings, so there was this massive piece of wood precariously dangling down above the goal, looking as if it could fall off at any minute. So the referee had to stop the game. This man then just emerged from the tunnel with his ladder to try and take it off. It took 8 minutes to fix. I'd gone to the game with my old Talk Sport producer, who's a Shots fan, and said to him afterwards, only at Kenilworth Road does our ground manage to fall apart even more than it already has done. Both sets of fans found it very amusing, and the Aldershot fans were even singing at one point, Luton Town is falling down. Anyway, I look forward to hearing your stories, ladies. I will be back next week for another non-league roundup.
Hi, I'm Paul Merson and you're listening to the Offside Rule podcast.
Thank you very much, Faye, for our non-league roundup. On to topic three, and it's pinch me, I must be dreaming. So at the weekend, I was reporting on Crystal Palace versus Barnsley. Barnsley forced to play in Palace's away kit. I took a photo, put it on Twitter. It got loads of retweets. So I've asked you both to choose two examples where strange things have happened in football that maybe got you rubbing your eyes in disbelief or disrupted a match. I think we'll start with Rachel on this one because you're the experienced player. You must have seen things with your very own eyes.
Well, in our own match, I think it was in the Cyprus Cup or the Algarve Cup, there was an England game and just suddenly a dog came on the pitch and we were like, okay. But you could tell that people found it funny, but then no one wanted to touch the dog because you never know what a dog's going to do. So we just all sort of stood there and waited for the owner to come and get the dog off. Where it came from, I have no clue.
No one pitched in with a tackle then?
No way. Definitely not me.
How much added time?
I don't know, to be honest. I think everyone was just sort of... I don't think the game got restarted for a while, to be honest, because everyone was just in hysterics, just thinking, where has this dog come from? Whose dog is this?
And have you got another one?
I think just from watching men's football and watching Sunderland-Liverpool and seeing a beach ball on the pitch and that being the cause of a goal, it was just like... what is going on?
That certainly did have a lot of people rubbing their eyes in disbelief. And I'm sure being a Liverpool fan, it had you rubbing your eyes, Kate.
Particularly as we lost the game because of the beach ball. Whoever's idea it was to get those, because I think it was a sponsored beach ball type thing, because there were a few around, weren't there? Just from the depths of my memory, yeah. Whoever came up with the idea for those beach balls, probably someone at Sunderland, of course. Yes.
What have you got?
I've got a couple. One is from my own experience of playing football, which is, I should clarify this because I'm sat with 125 cat Rachel Yankee in the room. I'm not that good at football, but I do like to have a kick about, and I do try hard, Rachel,
she
I promise.
Try hard. She's a trier, is Kate.
Unlike Lindsay, who's really gobby on the pitch and is generally someone to be feared. And if you don't like tackling, you really wouldn't like playing with Lindsay Hooper. The first one, actually, I watched this on it was a compilation show ages ago, and it just really, really tickled me. Back in the day, in fact, I had to look up the year. It was 1972. Liverpool were playing Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that the linesman pulled a muscle and couldn't continue. Now, back in those days...
Oh, I got this one!
No. He pulled a calf muscle. And back in those days, there was no fourth official. What did they do? They put an announcement over the tannoy. Is there anyone here who can step in? And quite unsuspectingly, Mr. Jimmy Hill popped up and said, I'll do it.
But could you imagine a TV pundit saying, oh, actually, I'll go and get me tracky bottoms on and go and do it, run the line. Can we share that one?
Yeah. Yes. I've got another one. Well, I've got a general one. Pinch me, I must be dreaming. At the clothing that Premier League footballers decide to wear when they're not on the pitch. Djibril Cissé is one of my favourite fashion horrors. He wears clothes that cannot be computed. Clothes that if you take a photograph of them, it goes blurry because there are too many colour and pattern combinations going on. Footballers' fashion drives me up the wall. Who's the England player most likely to pull out a fashion horror?
Oh, gosh. Well, back in the day, it'd definitely be Sue Smith. She's going to hate me. But yeah, she'd do it every week. You'd be like, well, what is Sue got on now?
Well, I've played football with Lindsay a couple of times, and I've got a few football buddies who like to play football, etc. Anyway, the story goes, and this isn't my own personal experience, but the story goes that the girls were having a knockabout. Now, I was playing football when I was pregnant, up to about 4 or 5 months with like a bump band on, which was wicked because no one would go near me. So, Rachel, if you don't like tackles, just pretend that you're having a baby. No one goes near you. It's great. You can get away with anything you like. And one of the other girls was also pregnant too and having a kickabout, and she was quite kind of heavily pregnant, so this isn't a serious game. She was at one of the local parks in Southeast London, and she had to put a stop to the game because she thought her waters had broken. Had they broken? No, but at that late stage in pregnancy, you're basically open to all kinds of incidents, and unfortunately this was not a waters breaking incident, but one of the other kind.
I really hope we don't see that in the WSL this year. Okay, my final one, because we've shared one. Ball boy scores a goal. Brazil, yeah. 2006. It's a game. Oh, you know what? I would choose ones with these sides. Atletico Sorocaba and Santa Cruzanense. I've got no idea. My Brazilian isn't very good. But let's just call them Sorocaba for the time being. They're leading 1-0. The referee's back is turned. I hate to point this out because it really is inconsequential, but it was a woman. She's not doing us any favours in this story. We're not doing any favours for each other in this story because her back was turned. Admittedly, she didn't really have the support of fourth officials and blah, blah, blah. And a ball boy brought a ball onto the pitch, side-footed it into the net, ran off. She turned her back. The ball was in the back of the net. She blew and gave the goal.
That's great.
So that is our bizarre disruption on a football pitch. Can't believe we both had Jimmy Hill.
Twitter topic of the week.
Usually we would have Twitter topic of the week, but in light of Rachel Yankee being here with us, we decided to abandon Twitter topic of the week and do Twitter question of the week. And they're all for you. So I've got a sheet here, and we'll just see, time depending on what we can get through. So Girls Sport Talk got in touch and said, after getting 125 caps, they'd love to know a career highlight of yours and what you'd do if you didn't play football.
Oh, wow. What I'd do if I didn't play football, Great question. I don't really know, to be honest. I would have liked to worked in schools and been a teacher. Yeah. I mean, I still do work in schools. I'm a coach and I work in primary schools. But I would have liked to have been a teacher. Career highlights. I think quadruple year with Arsenal, you know, that was amazing. To be able to do that was just fantastic. And getting my 100th cap with England, playing in that game, walking out as captain, scoring and getting player of the match. Can't really get much better than that, can you?
you think you ticked all of those off. Manisha Taylor got in touch saying, Rachel has all the qualities of making a great manager. Would you consider doing that after playing?
Nice one, Manisha. Thank you for that. Yeah, I think, you know, I enjoy coaching. I enjoy coaching kids at the moment. So, yeah, I think maybe I'd look into it. I obviously need to get qualified a lot higher than what I am, but possibly.
Paige got in touch, and this is a great one. She's going on a scholarship to the USA in August, and she said, do you have any advice, speaking from experience, of the American game to give her?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're going on a scholarship, something that I was offered when I was a youngster and turned it down because it just, that wasn't for me. But if that's something that you want to do, then yeah, just to go out there and enjoy it, really, and make sure you work hard. I think the American game, slightly different to ours, is they're more based around sort of fitness and that sort of style and a lot of technical stuff. So I think, you know, to go out there and just enjoy it and learn and just take advantage of everything that you can have there.
Matt got in touch, Matt Roxburgh. He's asking about the senior men's teams and whether there's any crossover. Do they help out with the ladies? Do you ever do any training? I saw the Liverpool squad did recently. Yeah. They trained together.
Yeah, that looked fantastic, to be honest. No, with us, well, this pre-season, because obviously our manager, Laura Harvey, moved quite late on to go and manage out in America and in Seattle. So for us, we didn't have a manager and we didn't know who it was going to be until quite late on. So Vic, who's our general manager, Vic Akers, asked some of the men's team. We had the assistant fitness coach come down and do fitness with us, Marcus, the silent assassin. He'd come in and go, hi girls, how are you? And we'd be like, yeah, you're right. And he'd be like, run. So but no, he was fantastic. He'd do it all the running with us and, you know, some of the stuff. Although it was very simple, but it was really effective and it was fantastic. And Neil Bamford as well, he came down, who's obviously works with, you know, the assistant to Arsene Wenger, works with Arsene Wenger and Steve Bould. So, you know, he came down and took training and it was just amazing to be coached by him and you know, just all the tactics. And again, it was just, you know, real simple stuff that he was teaching us. But, you know, he demanded more out of us and made us, you know what it's like to play for Arsenal and brought that standard back into the club.
Just two more. We're going on to more serious issues now. Are you ready? Pauline Clinton says, do you have a favourite football team strip?
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh. Anything Arsenal, really. You know, red and white.
And on a complete aside, I don't know whether you're a reader, but Colette Hall obviously loves her book. She said, what's the last book you read?
Last book I read is Paul Merson. How not to be a professional footballer.
Should I be?
Oh, it's hilarious. I love Paul Merson. I'm not a massive reader, but I've only really read Ian Wright's book because I love Ian Wright. I read Gazza's and Paul Merson.
There was a crossover between the Gazza and Paul Merson book and that Russian roulette drinking game. If anyone has not read that book, we won't reveal, but they just need to go and read about it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And it's just, unfortunately, I could relate to some of the things. Not all of it. I'm not a Paul Merson. But just, some of the fun times he's having, I'm thinking that's football back in the day.
I hope you didn't do what he did in a hotel room.
No.
We're going to now pass over to Michelle Lissell. We get a update of all things Syria, so a different global roundup each week. And it's Michelle's turn. Michelle, can you fill us in on all things going on in Italy?
We kick off our roundup with the Rome Derby, a massive match for both sides trying to finish top five with just 7 weeks to go. Roma captain Francesco Totti leveled with his 12th of the season. With their point, Lazio edge past Inter into fifth, Roma 3 points behind their city rivals. Inter, meanwhile, imploding at home, allowing a 12-minute hat-trick from Herman Dennis of Atalanta as they lost 4-3. Full points would have vaulted them over Fiorentina into fourth. Oh, and you may want to Google the miss of the season by by Andrea Ranocchia in the final moments that would have tied it, it's painful. En route to AC Milan's match in Florence, Mario Balotelli was caught smoking in the bathroom on board the train. That is against Italian law and resulted in a club fine. His bad habit, though, hasn't hampered his play. 7 goals in 8 games, but was held off the score sheet in their 2-2 draw with the Viola. However, after insulting an official in that match, Balotelli has been suspended for 3 games. At the time of this recording, no appeal yet launched, but it's expected that will happen, and he'll miss just 2. No doubt, though, he will be absent for their home match versus Napoli next week. A win would put them within a point of their second-place visitors. Off the pitch in Milan, their interest in QPR as a Delta-Rapt isn't going away. The Rossoneri have been linked with the midfielder before, but are only keen to snap him up if QPR are relegated. And yes, that is a very real possibility. Oh, and Juve, full points again after a win over Pescara. The club has now just given up 3 goals in their last 6. They're 9 points clear at the top. That's a wrap from Italy, ladies.
Thanks very much, Michelle. Well, that brings episode 22 of the Offside Rule podcast to an end. I'd like to advise you all to keep downloading. We're on SoundCloud, we're on iTunes as well. Go to @OffsideRulePod on Twitter, give us a follow, and the Facebook. Kate's the admin person who, like, properly makes sure that I'm across everything. And she's going, yeah, yeah, that's good. You're getting the message across.
I love the fact that I'm known as the admin person, which makes me sound really important, doesn't it, Rachel?
She's an exec producer and admin and basically one woman show. But yeah, she does give
Would anyone like a cup of tea? I also do that as well.
She gives me a look of approval when I give the message across good. So yeah, get downloading. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. It's been really fun. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on, and good luck as well for the Euros and the new WSL season.
Thank you.
I hope to see you breaking Peter Shilton's record very, very soon.
Fingers crossed.
Ah, thank you very much. Bye-bye for now.
The Offside Rule, We Get It, with Lindsay Hooper, Hayley McQueen and Cade Borsay. Produced by Sarah Grunn.